part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Did you go see Justice League?
I'm not gonna see it.
Me neither. No, I mean, there's a curiosity that's kind of setting in, but
I know
Amy and Talon kind of want to see it because of Wonder Woman, but I'm
just so disappointed. I think Warner Brothers and whoever's in charge over there they're turning out crap. And
yeah.
I'm not going to apologize for it because I love the characters. I know a lot of people will do that. Mm-hmm. But I saw Wonder Woman this weekend with Heidi. We rented it, and I didn't think that was any good.
Oh, really? I liked it a lot, actually.
I mean, it's leagues better than the Snyder stuff, but I thought it was very predictable and by the numbers, and I was just – didn't think – I mean, it was better than anything else they've done recently, but – I don't know. I'm disappointed in their whole thing. I'll see Thor. I'll see Thor Ragnarok like five more times before I go see Justice League.
Yeah, well, Thor is the thing to see. I mean, you know, so awesome. I had my problems with that too, but I liked it.
Sure. It's fun. And I feel like Marvel and Disney or whoever, I feel like I'm included. I feel like I'm taken on a ride. Whereas, you know, Justice League, it's like, oh, can I be, you know, can I be humbled and watch the characters? This is such a different vibe, and I'm sick of people apologizing for shit movies. Listen, you know, I'm not a fan of the Nolan movies, but I can't sit here and tell you that guy doesn't know how to make a really amazing film.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So anyway, we're not talking about that tonight, are we?
No, we're not. All right, well, why don't we get started? Started with the punishment. Bring on the punishment of the Punisher. I am Christian Horn. And this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am here on the line with my friend Ian Scheller, and we were both very excited to take in, well, you were more excited, I think you were really excited to see The Punisher, weren't you, Ian? Like, you were, like, really excited.
Oh, I was absolutely excited, and honestly, yeah, I'll just leave it at that for now. Very excited.
Well, there is one thing I kind of want to say before we start talking about The Punisher, and
yes.
You know, I think that a lot of the press has been subdued for The Punisher because of all the, killings with guns in our society as of late. And sort of to counterbalance that, I just, you know, want to get a little political on the opening of this podcast.
Oh, yeah,
say
sure.
That, you know, there are ways to combat that sort of violence. There is a link on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast website. I put it up there a long time ago. But if you are like me and you are interested in sort of curbing the amount of gun violence out there by, you know, enacting or passing or helping pass common sense gun legislation, you know, please donate to the Brady Center to prevent gun violence. I think it's a worthy thing to do, especially with how nuts everything's been in sort of like the landscape lately. And I think The Punisher is very much a series that sort of lends itself to the bit of soul searching when it comes to guns in our society. So I just wanted to sort of get that out there because I don't necessarily, obviously this is all fantasy and stuff, but I don't want to sort of like be painted as a hypocrite either, and people like, but you're for gun control, yet you love the Punisher show. And I'm like, yeah, but that's a fantasy, you know, like it's a fantasy. So I do want to say that I think it's a worthy thing to donate to, and make sure you check out the Brady Center to prevent gun violence. And I'm sure there's plenty of other places that you can donate to if you think it's a worthy cause or something to stand up for.
That's good. Yeah. And I mean, on that note too, I'd like to say, we're going to get into this podcast, and this show honestly, it's made me think of very uncomfortable things.
Sure.
And I, for those who have had family members or for those that have served themselves in the military, if you're hearing me joke about certain things, I'm really just looking at it in the lens as the show, as reference. All right.
Sure.
So I want people to know that if there is some, you know, off color or ignorant commentary that I may lay down, it's not because I don't appreciate those people that have served.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
It's just because I am looking at it strictly through what I saw on the show, taking into account, you know, the years and years of comic history, comic book history of the character. I like to joke about stuff anyway. I mean, if I could just elaborate a little bit more, you know, my grandfather, obviously, he was in World War II. Not obviously, but he was in World War II. But he really didn't talk about his experiences.
Yeah.
And I know this show is fantasy, and I think that's the right way to talk about it.
Yeah.
I think that it just deals with so much. You can't help but I think we might get political. I think we might talk about things that are very uncomfortable. I think that's good to talk about it. And So I just wanted to put that out there just to let people know. Hey, you know, I don't know what to say. Does that make sense?
Because obviously the Punisher as a character in the comics even was always a combat veteran, whether it was Vietnam or they made it Desert Storm or, you know, the current engagement that we've been in for God knows how long, you know, like over 10 years, probably the longest war in our history. You know, the Punisher has always sort of been a combat veteran, and obviously this series touches on that, and it touches on the sort of repercussions of that, you know, of what the war on terror has wrought, you know what I mean? And whether you are, you know, pro-war or anti-war or whatever, I think there's a lot of things that this thing kind of opens up and ends up talking about. And that's why I think this series is as good as it is. I mean, I think we should also say that what we're doing here is we're talking about the first half of The Punisher. It's kind of like our tradition to, you know, when these come out, to do talk about the first half the first week, and then we finish it up like the week after or so. So this is like the first half of The Punisher, episodes 1 through 6, around there. So, and we do spoil things, we should also say, but, I think the thing that I admire most about this series is that it's sort of touched on the reality of being or having been a veteran in sort of like this age of anti-terrorism, and how none of it is sort of a clean fight, and it doesn't leave anyone unscathed. You know, the families, the veterans themselves, the government that is sort of running the engagement and the behind the scenes and stuff like that, the CIA, the, you know, Homeland Security, all that stuff. Like, I think that I was talking to a friend of mine. While I don't believe that as of yet that this is my favorite Marvel TV show, I still reserve that for Daredevil, but I do feel that it is the most relevant and probably the most important one that they've done so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, man, there's so much to talk about with this show. I feel like we should maybe pick an aspect of it. Can I start with just talking about the production value of the show?
Well, why don't we talk about our history with the character first? Because
I'm easy. Zero.
Zero? Like you never read the comics at all?
The only Punisher book I own is The Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe.
Really? So why
That's
were
it.
You so excited about the show itself?
Was it something?
His appearance on Daredevil?
I loved him on Daredevil. I think the lead, John Bernthal, is fantastic. He's grown on me a lot since Walking Dead, but I think he's been Thomas Jane was a talented actor, and in fact Dolph Lundgren was awesome, but I think he has the most advanced material, the most tools to work with, and he has the acting chops to actually present and has presented the best version of this character I've ever seen in live action.
Yeah.
And I've waited for that long for a very long time, I feel. I thought the Thomas Jane incarnation, like I thought the actor was there, but I didn't think the casting was right, and I really didn't think the scripting was right. No offense to anyone who worked on that, because they really tried hard to make that right.
I don't think they tried that hard, but anyway, go ahead.
They weren't given a huge budget, and there wasn't a lot of confidence, I know, with the director on that, because I listened to the DVD commentary.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, and there was a lot of storms, a lot of production problems, because they shot in Miami.
Well, I think the problem with that movie, the Thomas Jane version, is the script. I mean, from the beginning, I think from the beginning they were off. They kind of like were doing sort of vigilante light. You know what I mean? I mean, we've kind of talked about the Punisher before on this podcast, and my thing with the Punisher, and it's very much sort of like those Death Wish movies and, you know, Dirty Harry that sort of somewhat inspired the character, or maybe the creation of the character, or may have subtly influenced the people who were writing the Spider-Man comic at the time to introduce him as an anti-hero, is the fact that that movie has one of the most ridiculous villains in John Travolta, and the Punisher needs a really awful, like, nihilistic, just terrible human being, because then the audience has to be thirsty for that character's blood and needs to feel that sort of, you know, sense of vengeance that the Punisher feels. And it's like when the Punisher delivers his brand of justice, which is always like really harsh, the audience has to be able to go along with it and get carried away with it. And the only way you're going to do that is to have a villain who is just beyond redemption. You know what I mean? And like very much like in those Death Wish movies and Dirty Harry movies. You know what I mean?
No, I completely agree, because, man, you know, the Punisher himself is not for everybody. So I'm assuming, did you do more collecting than I did with the Punisher?
Well, so the Punisher, I mean, as anyone knows and you know, I mean, I'm much more of sort of like a, you know, brightly colored red cape, red, white and blue shield character fan, you know, comic book fan. I mean, my favorites are, you know, tend to be Captain America, Superman, stuff like that. The people who sort of like walk the sort of moral high ground and sort of stand for something concrete and, you know, decency and stuff like that. I mean, not to say that I wasn't into Batman, because I was as a little kid and even growing up, you know, The Dark Knight Returns. But the Punisher was never a character that I really loved. There is one series that is excellent. It was a miniseries, and it's written by Stephen Grant and illustrated by Mike Zeck, who is an amazing comic illustrator from the 80s. And it's collected as The Punisher Circle of Blood. And that, to me, is probably the best experience I ever had reading a comic book. I know a lot of people like the Garth Ennis stuff. That stuff's kind of fun and kind of silly and fun. But for me, Circle of Blood is the quintessential Punisher story. And it's a miniseries that they did in the 80s, and it still holds up. I think I read it. I have the trade somewhere, and I reread it like a couple of years ago. And I was just like, yeah, this is a really good story. I know Jim Lee worked on him for a while. And I actually have interviewed a couple of times on this podcast Mike Barron, who wrote the character for a long time. Did good work with him, but the Punisher was never somebody that I really gravitated toward or loved or thought was great. I was more into reading comics for the fantasy, like the Fantastic Four, the X-Men and stuff like that. So a dude with a gun wasn't something that I was really, you know,
right.
And I used to have, there was this kid in high school who I would always have a debate with, where it was like, who would win in a fight, you know, the Punisher or Batman? And I was like, Batman. And he was always like, the Punisher, the Punisher's got guns. And I'm like, but Batman fights guys with guns all the time. He fights military guys all the time. The Punisher's just another punk with a gun. And I was sort of vindicated in that Kurt Busiek, George Perez crossover with the Avengers meets the JLA, where they do sort of like a fight scene between Batman and the Punisher. And it basically is such a short fight, because Batman, it basically takes place like off panel, like Batman, you know, wipes the floor with him. And it's just like, yes. So for me, the Punisher is never like a character that I was crazy about or sought out or collected. I think, you know, there were a couple issues. Jim Lee was on it for a while, and I always liked Jim Lee's art growing up. But the Punisher was never a character that I was like, yes, I got to collect the Punisher, or I have all the issues of the Punisher. But that one miniseries definitely stuck with me, initially because I loved Mike Zeck's artwork growing up.
Sure.
But but it's a really good story about the Punisher, like going to prison and having to escape. And there's this like sort of a conspiracy going on, and he's got to figure it out. Really good stuff. Really good stuff. So for me, the Punisher, you know, I've definitely read more Punisher than you, because I do have the Garth Ennis series, some of it. I have read Circle of Blood and other things, and he's shown up in Spider-Man a lot and other books. So, but he's never one of my favorites, never one of my favorites. But this show, I think, is, I think it's one of my favorite Marvel shows as of right now. At first, I was a little bored with the first two episodes. I was like, man, where is this going? Because I was expecting sort of like, you know, him tearing it up, like being sort of like a, to use, for lack of a better phrase, like a spirit of vengeance, like sort of like Ghost Rider, just going around and kicking ass and taking names. But it doesn't start off that way. And I found it to be a little bit slow in the first two episodes. How about you?
Slow? Well, yeah, I mean, they had to build some stuff up, but I thought that the tone of it being so real, and me being really ignorant about what, you know, a character like that would go through and the characters around him, I just was like very happy to watch it. It's so different from anything I would ever watch, and I think I'm only watching it because it is a comic book character, and I wanted to see if Marvel could redeem itself.
Iron Fist?
Yeah, and even Defenders to a certain extent. I think they got ahead of themselves, and I still don't know. It's like the big mystery with Iron Fist, you know, how can a show be so disjointed and weak when something like this, which, I mean, there were parts of me that were like, I got to turn this off, but then I couldn't, I just couldn't.
Was it too intense for you or that sort of thing?
It's just super intense. And again, it's not my thing. I don't like anything with military stuff. I don't like anything with this. I mean, the level of combat here and brutality is, I'm like, I feel like they watched Logan and they were like, okay, let's be true to this reality in a way.
Yeah.
So I don't have any trouble with the pacing at all, actually.
Yeah. It's interesting because, my wife, Amy, she's actually really liking the show. And I think she's the one who gave it more of a chance than I did. And we were having a really interesting discussion this weekend about it. And I was like, yeah, you know, the first two episodes were kind of slow and it's kind of like not, because my expectation was that he was still going to be hunting down, you know, criminals, or he was going to be sort of finishing, you know, the fight of like killing all the people who had harmed his family. And it kind of starts off like that with like an opening scene. But then it sort of, it very much retreats and pulls back and becomes a bit sort of a more mellow, or not mellow, but sort of, I don't know. It definitely pulls back from that thing that he was in the Daredevil show, which was just like a stone cold killer. And I'm going to, it's like he took time to reflect. And Amy made the really good point that she's like, well, you know, he can't just like be finished finding all his the killers who killed his family, and then just decide he's going to like hunt criminals for a living because otherwise he's like a sociopath or a psychopath. Like if he just decides he's going to continue killing, he has to have some sort of reason. And for me, I was like, well, we got introduced to him in Daredevil, and I was hoping he was still going to go down that path, and I was ready for that to continue. And then I get like another two episodes of sort of like almost a re-origin story, you know what I mean? Like starting over or a new beginning for him, which I guess makes sense for anybody who's never seen the show or knows the character or not seen Daredevil. That kind of makes sense. But for me, it was like a very slow start. And then once sort of like episode three happens and the character of Micro is introduced, that's when it started gelling for me and like really kicking in.
That's interesting. I think they had no choice, I think, but to really do some world building for him and make it a three-dimensional character, because in the comics, you could really get away with someone just being zany or someone just being all powerful or someone, you know, just doing what you're talking about. And we got that, thank goodness, in Daredevil. I mean, when I went back and watched Daredevil season two again, I was like, God, this is awesome. It's so awesome. And it's almost, I believe he gets rid of his skull shirt in the beginning of this.
Yeah, which bummed me out.
And he's like, he's done for now. He killed a bunch of people, and he's like, and you start to see that there is a loose affiliation with him and, you know, troops that have served and other veterans. And you get those little pieces of his world, that how fragmented it is and how he's trying to deal with this day by day. Now, obviously, it'd be stupid to assume every veteran comes home in this condition.
Sure.
But I guess they're sort of, it's almost like they're suggesting, okay, he's still dealing with the war, but also dealing with the loss of his entire family.
Yeah.
So he's got this double thing, double tragedy, triple tragedy, however you want to put it. But yes, when I agree with you, when I thought what they did with Micro in this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. I think that actor's fantastic.
Yeah,
I think
too.
The two of them together are really something else. I mean, I've never really seen anything like it, honestly. And maybe because I don't watch a lot of war movies and everything like that, but I just thought they have the it just feels so real. And I really did love what they did with Micro. I don't know his real backstory though. What in the comics, he's like a heavyset guy with glasses, right?
Yeah, he's different in the comics, I think. And I can't remember, again, I did not read like a ton of Punisher. I knew about Micro because I would, you know, maybe pick up an issue here or there. And but obviously it's a completely different physical type. And very much sort of like younger and less of a schlub than, you know, the stereotypical 80s, you know, computer nerd who is heavy set, has glasses, is balding. Like this is much more sort of a, you know, to use the term that they use in The Punisher a lot, especially in the beginning, he's much more of a hipster sort of version of Micro. But he's excellent. I mean, he is definitely the thing. I mean, him and John Bernthal, they have a chemistry that is absolutely fantastic. And whoever's writing their dialogue, the dialogue between them or their interaction, is absolutely fantastic too, because it is very much sort of like the angry Batman and, well, not so much Alfred, but, you know, sort of like Batman's sidekick sort of thing with which is like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you? Because this characterization of the Punisher, and I guess it was very much present in the Daredevil thing, where he's just kind of like shuts people out. He's not interested in letting people in, and he's just an instrument of like his own anger. And that very much like comes through in this series. But there are times where like the Punisher, Frank Castle, is almost like monosyllabic, where just like, man, is he even all there at this point?
Right.
And that's kind of very interesting, all, you know, the element that they brought in with this character Micro, because he plays off of him and they do have like some sort of like weird silent chemistry. And, you know, the Punisher by himself would just be a bore, But now that he has somebody to frustrate him and his, an ally to sort of like be his foil, it works really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's they're just great together. And it's I feel like the character of Micro elevating that character, it just it elevates all of it.
Yeah.
Because and they're in it together. Whereas, I mean, the very brief stuff I saw of Micro in the comics was like, okay, you know, they seemed, you know, separate. I didn't know why Micro was helping him in the comics, but this is like they've been lumped together in this conspiracy, which yeah. I think by episode six we're starting to put it together. But I feel like they weren't so explicit about it. Like, did you understand the conspiracy is not only are they like assassinating people, but there's drugs involved? Did you get?
Well, I did not understand that in the beginning because I don't believe that Frank Castle knew. Like, I think right. a lot of this is definitely from, or his remembrance is from his POV and that of his best friend. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely, I mean, it's only when it's revealed to the audience with that guy who they, you know, they go into the woods to sort of, you know, discover
right.
and find Gunner. Out what he knows that the sort of heroin connection very much comes to the fore. And that was just like a very interesting twist. I mean, I think that the way that they built everything was kind of cool because, you know, in the beginning of the series, he thinks that he's destroyed everyone who had ties to the murder of his family.
Right.
And then what ends up happening is that he kind of starts to discover that, oh, the murder of his family was a much bigger thing in sort of the thing that
yeah.
he thought that he left back in the war. And
right.
By episode six, you know, they've shown or they've insinuated that, you know, they've pretty much shown or spoken that his family was assassinated by some government, you know, crew, but they haven't shown like any, you know, they haven't shown how they were killed or anything like that, which I assume is coming later in flashbacks because he keeps having recurring dreams about, you know, what
yes.
happened to his family and yeah. his wife in particular. But I'm, you know, I think the whole thing, you know, with him and Micro, I mean, you know, to go into the story a little bit, I mean, basically Frank Castle thinks that he's done, you know, punishing people, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, he's
and
done.
Basically, he's like, I'm done. And for some reason, you know, there's a part of me like he goes back to New York City, which is the one place where probably his face would have been plastered all over the news. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
But he's grown out a beard and he's hair and he's working construction on a construction site. And this was the bit where I was a little bit like, really? Come on. Like he spends all day with a hammer smashing
yeah.
walls.
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on. Like, that's just like, are you telling me that they paid some guy to basically
yeah.
hammer down? Don't they have machines to do that? Like, I was just like, it's kind of silly. Like he's doing this sort of like Zen thing, smashing down walls and he doesn't do anything else. And that to me was a bit silly. That's where I was like rolling my eyes a little
bit. It's a stretch. I mean, I think, yeah. But again, this is a guy who's barely holding it together. I mean,
yeah.
just barely. And that's the amazing thing about the Punisher. And even the characters that John Bernthal has played, they're always holding it together by like
yeah.
a thread.
By, he's
you know?
Good at that, yeah.
And yeah, I do admit in the beginning, I was like, where are they going with this? I go, is this going to
yeah.
suck?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
it, you know, and you're like, okay, you know, the only way for him to just continue is to put physicality, you know, behind his, you know, he's got to put like just physical, you know, action behind whatever that's
yeah,
his
it's
way
sort
of
like a meditation
dealing.
To keep him in under control.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they did a great job though, kind of laying the seeds though of, again, the workers that were like just treating him a certain way. And, the guy who just wants to be his friend. Like, there's some really good, like, just character stuff in the beginning.
There is, but it is very predictable. I mean, I did like the Latin guy who was sort of like the new guy on the construction site and being his friend and giving him a part of his sandwich. But you and I know that, like, from the moment that that guy tries to make friends with him, like, I'm like, oh, that guy's getting in trouble. Like, something bad is going to happen to that guy. And the Punisher is going to have to save his ass, which is exactly what happens. And it happens, like, in the first two episodes. I thought that that was a character that was going to stick around and would stretch out and maybe be sort of like his sounding board. But it turned out that Micro was the one that, not his sounding board, but came in and sort of became the reflective, the more calm reflection of what his vengeance is, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, but again, I think once you got to the point in the beginning there, that arc where this guy basically goes on a heist. You know, and that starts to unfold, and Punisher is like, you know, we see that a lot with the characters, comic book characters, where, especially in the movies, it's kind of where they're forced to use their abilities, even when they've stepped away from it. It's sort of like it's their fate.
Yeah.
And that sequence, when they unloaded on that first sequence where he got that, has a sledgehammer. I mean,
oh my God, yeah, that was great.
I mean, it's just, it's so violent, and there's no apologies for anything. I mean, they don't, Netflix doesn't even rate this stuff, does it?
I think it may have some sort of rating on it, but it's not like it's like in the upper right-hand corner of your TV like it is when you watch like network TV shows or like this content may be too, I mean, but that is the Punisher. I mean, it has always been, particularly 80s, 90s, it has always been a very violent sort of
no-holds-barred
comic.
Right. But that's, I think that's why I love it so much. There's really no apologies on either side. They've thrown in the grittiness of the character to, I think, to a T. They don't apologize for any of it. They don't apologize for the reality of war, the reality of gun violence, the reality of, you know, psychological trauma that people are going through. It's incredibly blue collar. But you felt, though, once you got to that third episode, you felt better about
to the third episode and Micro's introduced and everything sort of like kind of starts the ball rolling.
Right.
I mean, I was, and by episode four, I was definitely all in. Like, it was very much like, it seemed.
Did you say you were all in?
Yeah. I was like, by episode four, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. I mean, you know, the thing is there is very much like, I mean, you know, anybody who listens to this podcast and you know, there is very much a sort of, you know, we're nerds. There's a completist thing. It's like, I want to watch The Punisher.
Right.
Even if it ended up sucking, you know, I want to give it a chance. And I do tend to give shows that I'm interested in more of a chance. Like, even if it's not a superhero show or whatever, I give them more of a chance than I would because I want to see, like, okay. And I also understand that TV, it takes time to unravel. I just think those first two episodes could have sped along a little bit quicker than they did. And then, but by, you know, by the time Micro's introduced, Micro's family, Micro's wife, like there's such an interesting dynamic that develops there where it's like Frank Castle is sort of becoming the father figure or interjecting himself into this household where the guy that he's allied with is like pretending to be dead. And he's watching because he's got the cameras hooked up in the house so he can see what his wife is doing. Like, I mean, that whole bit is like, that's just like genius and very uncomfortable, like so uncomfortable to watch, you know?
I thought that was a really ingenious plot point that they put in there. And the tension. Attention. There's tons of moments like that in this show. Every scene has this incredible tension. If you go to the family aspect like you're talking about, and then if you go to the CIA stuff and the Homeland Security stuff, there is a constant power struggles in every single scene.
Yeah.
And I got to mention this actor who is playing Billy Russo, Ben Barnes.
Yeah, he's really good.
Is this guy incredible or what?
He was in Westworld. Did you watch Westworld?
I didn't. I couldn't stand him in Westworld.
I know. He was great in that, but he's great in this, too.
And he was great in it in the way that I couldn't stand him. I have the IMDb pulled up here just so I could reference people. But he is so likable and... But every time he's with the Punisher and they're just talking, and I mean, there is an unsaid, incredible tension. It permeates the whole thing, and that's just I don't know. I did want to talk about the production of the show. I thought is top notch. I feel like it's cohesive. It's like it feels like they researched. It feels like, I mean. I that's why it's more baffling when I look back and think, what the hell happened on Iron Fist?
Well, I really feel like what happened was, because there was a lot of talk, like when Daredevil season 2 is being shot and Marvel was like, okay, we're just going to go ahead with a Punisher show because the guy's doing such an amazing job. We're going to do the Punisher. And I think a lot of people wanted to throw Iron Fist under the bus. There was even a rumor that for a little while there that Iron Fist was just going to be a movie and not even a series. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, come on, give us the series. But I think a lot of the sort of research and, craft that went into this show was pulled away from Iron Fist because Iron Fist is light years behind what this is. I mean, the Punisher is very grown up. In its own way, it's very grown up. It's very mature. It deals with subject matter that is violent, but it also deals with stuff that is very, for lack of a better term, grown up, because you're basically talking about PTSD. You're talking about the government spying on people. You're talking about, veterans, what we do overseas, like all this interesting stuff and all the harm and blowback that it causes to people. It could be a very stereotypical sort of spy thing where it's like, oh, the government's spying on us and we've got to take them down and stuff like that. But there's just, the violence plays into it where it's like people actually really get hurt. I mean, the Punisher does recover from an arrow in the shoulder pretty quickly and, surgery to remove it. But, there is still that brutality there where you're just like, oh my gosh. And sort of the repercussions of that. The bits that I ended up loving that I thought I was not going to like were the bits with his friend, Curtis, I guess played by Jason R. Moore, like soldiers sort of, it's not AA, but it's sort of like the encounter group that the soldiers have where I thought that bit was good. That was going to be very tiresome, but even that character ended up being like a really great rock sort of like Frank Castle's life that he could lean on and really played a pivotal role in like humanizing him.
That character, again, this fantastic acting, and you figured, oh, this is going to be some boring scenes, but he's almost like this kind of a central, he's like a tent pole. He's like, he seems to be the guy who's the most structured in this world. And does clue you in to how, Frank and Micro were able to kind of get away from the conspiracy and be sort of hiding in plain sight with new names. And it's an amazing two thing because, they spin off several other story arcs just from that group and the other characters in that group. Which
ended up surprising me as well.
You don't see, you don't really see it coming, and it's really kind of brilliant. And just real great acting. I mean, I just the way the scenes are lit, the editing is fantastic in this show. It's like it's so dark, Christian, but you don't lose sight of anything. It's all right there in front of you, and I don't know. I think it's a fantastic show. I looked at the ratings and early on, I read one review where it's like, the Punisher is not the right show for this time. And I'm thinking, you know, screw you. Like, if you're a reviewer or you're someone who's not into this stuff, just don't watch it. I understand if you got to review it or whatever, but it's like, there's nothing wrong with it coming out at this time. You can make the argument that every, you know, primetime news show is not the right show for this time. So, you know, to dismiss this show because it's you know, it has too much guns or this or that, and it's not your cup of tea, well, that's fine. But it's like, you know, for what this does for the character and also the subject matter, to take it and elevate it to a point that makes it relevant, that that brings up it's not just democratic or left wing or independent thoughts. They've crammed almost every angle of politics into this show.
Yeah.
And you're challenged. It's challenging for me to watch. I was surprised, actually, a lot of people at work did not watch it. I mean, I went right in.
Really?
And I haven't stopped. They haven't watched it yet. They're saving it, or they're going to get to it or whatever. I know people are, you know, busy with buying stuff because there's a lot of sales happening. And, you know, Justice League just came out, and a lot of shows, video games came out. But I was actually surprised. I thought more people would jump into it. But the, you know, at 64% or something on Rotten Tomatoes from the from the critics, but 94 from the audience.
Yeah. Well, it's good. Definitely, and on the Internet Movie Database right now, it's like at 9.2, which is kind of like one of the higher ratings for any of the Marvel shows. I think only Daredevil is right behind it.
Right.
And Daredevil's been out for a while. But it's really interesting that you say, like, I read some of those reviews too on Rotten Tomatoes, and most of the reviews were very much what you said, which is not necessarily addressing the content of the show, but addressing the timeliness of it, or where it fits into our sort of, you know, national outcry over gun violence. And the thing of it is like, again, it's that sort of stupid comment that people make after these shootings where it's like, now is not the time to talk about like gun control. No, it's the perfect time. And a show like this, it's like, when do you release it? When it's not relevant? No, you release something like this when it's time to sort of address these concerns. I mean, we've been at war for like over 10 years, thousands of veterans are homeless. Thousands of veterans are suffering from PTSD. Thousands of people are, you know, are just have no help and no aid. And we send them off to war, and they don't get anything when they come back. Like, what do they get? You know, it's not like, it's not even like sort of like, quote unquote, the greatest generation, where they came back and their school was paid. And, you know, a lot of the things they were helped with because society thought they owed them a debt. You know, it's like our society, we're fighting a war, and it's almost like it doesn't exist, you know. You know, not to go off the rails too much, but I've also been watching the PBS documentary Vietnam that aired, you know, it's like a 10-part documentary series. It's amazing. I've been watching it. I finally sat down and was like, I've had it on the DVR since it first aired, and I want to buy it on Blu-ray when it comes. It's already out on Blu-ray, but I want to buy it because I sort of collect those things, documentaries like that. But the thing of it is like, you look at that and you're like, what a stupid thing we got into. Mm-hmm. And not to say that the people who went to it are stupid, or not to say that the people who are serving now are stupid, but it just seems like such a waste. And now 10 years later, you know, you've got people still suffering from a war, and it's like, how did we get into this? So this is the perfect time for the Punisher. I mean, and at the same time, I don't think, I mean, again, it's, you and I have already acknowledged that this is fantasy, but it is not like lighthearted fantasy. This is not like yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. You know what I mean? This is very much like, oh, people get hurt. It is violent. You know what I mean? And not only do they physically get hurt, but there's a psychological, you know, toll that goes along with all this. And I think that's very important. And something like this, it's not like 24, where like Jack Bauer is running around torturing people. You know what I mean? This is a guy who is very wounded inside. And John Bernthal has done a fantastic job of sort of encapsulating that. You know, what I love about him is that you can tell that this guy's got a heart and has a sensitivity in him, but he's seen so much awful stuff and done so many things that he's just, you can read it on his face in every scene. There's definitely some scenes where I think he's kind of overdoing it with the tics a little bit and the mugging right. of his face, but he's still so good at this. Like, I mean, he really is the perfect Punisher. I mean, the perfect casting for this character, in my opinion.
Yeah. There's, I mean, I think it was between him and what's that guy's name? He was at Crossbones in Marvel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Frank, his actual name is Frank something.
Grillo, right? Frank Grillo.
Yeah.
I feel like it was between those two guys, and then John Bernthal came and took all that guy's parts away. but that's probably not true, because Frank Grillo was on.
He was already doing The Purge, so.
And he was in The Kingdom, you know, which ran for a while, pretty long-running TV show about MMA.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, there's no one else that could do it. I mean, I there are actors, but it's like, you know, he just it's like kind of like finally, you know. But it is not an easy role. It really looks like the kind of thing where you would need to take very long walks after a day on the set. Yeah. You know, and but he's fantastic. Now, Christian, what do you think about the Homeland Security actors we have? Let's see. Who are they?
You've got Amber Rose
Riva, who plays Dina Madani, and then she has like a sidekick here.
Yeah, Michael Nathanson, Sam Stein.
Yes,
I believe that's the guy.
Sam Stein. So, I mean, honestly, in the beginning, it took me a little bit to warm up to them, but
me too.
And I think maybe I was thinking, they probably shot all their stuff in like a week, you know what I mean? Like back to back. And I thought some of it was a little cold and touch and go, but I really have got into their characters and I love the setting they did. I mean, it's a real smart, simple, streamlined set, but it's awesome. I just everything's so well taken care of in this show, the details I really. Now I got to ask you something else. What about, let's see, did in episode 6, did we get to
the big Karen? Reveal?
Did we get to Karen?
Oh, yeah. Well, Karen.
Paige?
She shows up. I really like that actress, the woman Karen Paige. I think she is fantastic. And I mean, she used to be on True Blood, and I thought she was great in that. But I think she is definitely one of these characters and actresses that very much helps ground Daredevil, you know, in reality. I mean, I think she is definitely one of the big shining spots in this sort of Marvel universe, this Marvel Netflix universe. Because, I mean, every scene that she's in, I mean, you know, they have that meeting by the bridge, and she has this really great bit of dialogue where it's like, where does it end for you? Like, I don't see an end for you. Like, do you just keep going? Or once it's over, and then the whole loneliness thing that she said, I mean, that was a great piece of writing, but it was also just like a fantastic performance on her part. Like, I really buy her, like, all the time. Like, I buy that she, you know, what she's vocalizing and what she's going through, Deborah Ann Wall. I mean, I think she's really fantastic, and I've loved her in Daredevil, and I thought that she plays like a really good part in this. I love the whole, you know, the sort of getting in touch with the press and sort of trying to figure out, like, it's just so, like, I feel like the way that Frank Castle uses his connections is very, it seems very real to me. It seems like he's scrambling. Like you know how, like, you'll watch some spy shows and they're like, oh, I know this guy, and they go meet that guy, and it's all very neat. Like, there's a quality to this show where Frank Castle seems like he's just skittering around, and he's just trying to use the best tools at his disposal, because he's not as smooth as someone like Mike Rowe, or he's not a James Bond, and he's basically using whatever he can, and he's sort of a bit at his wit's end. You know what I mean?
It's messy. The whole thing's messy.
Yeah, and it's very much, they've done a really good job, in my opinion, of doing sort of that fugitive on the run feel. You know what I mean? That feel of like that I'm on the run, not the super cool secret agent like Tom Cruise. Like, I know exactly what I'm doing. Like, you know, I know my spots more than any. I mean, there's that scene where he gets shot by an arrow and he barely makes it out alive. And if it hadn't been for Micro, he would have died, you know, and you don't see that a lot in a lot of like sort of very clean, you know, spy thrillers, you know.
Right, right. No, that's an interesting thing. I didn't really think about that.
The thing about The Punisher is the thing that I always wanted to see out of a Punisher movie or something, like my dream would have been to have Martin Scorsese direct The Punisher and like a young Robert De Niro. I mean, to me, The Punisher is very much not that off the wall, but very, it was always in my mind had the intensity of a very young Taxi Driver, De Niro, and John Bernthal is the closest that you're getting to that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
In this particularly, because he's like taut like a wire. He looks like he's going to explode like any second, and he's not all there. You know, that's the greatest thing about the character is that, you know, he's not all there. You know, like, is that a guy that you want over for Thanksgiving dinner? I don't think so. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just, they've done such a good job with that. The guy on the run aspect is part of probably what I ended up loving the most, because it, like you said, it's not neat.
Right. It's not neat at all. And now, what about the gentleman who's playing the CIA guy?
Paul Rollins?
Yeah.
Paul, I believe it's Schultz. It looks like Schultz or Schultz. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
He was from Nurse Jackie. He used to be on Nurse Jackie.
Oh, he's good in this.
He was really good. He's really good at playing the slime ball. He was really good. I mean, it is very interesting that, you know, there's this stereotypical character in every show, like 24 or like these cop shows that, you know, you've got the dick boss. You know what I mean? There's always the dick boss. And, you know, what's his face? C. Thomas Howell played that part in the very beginning. And I was like, oh, great. Here's the dick boss. Like the guy that's not going to listen to the woman, even though she's perfectly qualified. You know, like they always have that character. But Paul Scholes, you haven't seen a lot of him yet. You've seen him in the flashbacks where they're about to engage and, you know, go find a guy. And he doesn't listen to Frank or Billy, you know, Billy's advice that it's a trap. But I feel like the second half of the show, he's going to be playing a lot more of a part, because the last shot of episode 6 is a big reveal, which I called. I don't know. Did you call that? Did you see that coming?
You know, not really. I was always suspecting why is there so much tension, you know? And then that happened. I'm like, oh, no.
That's so funny, because I called it. And then when it happened, it was one of those jump off the couch moments where I was like, I called that shit. I called it. Like I was like yelling. Like I was like, I nailed it. I was so proud of myself.
Yeah, I mean, well, because you keep seeing how deep it is. And again, the writing is so great, because it's so messy, but it's communicated clearly. And then the way all the characters are relating to each other is just, it feels so small, you know, that big world of, you know, wars and campaigns and all this type of, you know, politics, but they've made that world so small.
Yeah.
You know, and the Punisher's just like taking it all on his back and trying to just figure it all out. And he tries to do one thing and get his mind right, and just when there might be a glimmer of hope in his life, he's it's almost like he's distracted in this other direction, and then he's got to go kill more people. I mean, the fact that he just keeps saying, he's like, all right, Micro, we're gonna do this, but guess what, they're all gonna die.
Yeah.
and Micro's like, okay, Frank, okay.
Yeah, well, I love the bit where Micro looks like very disturbed about all that. Okay. And that's the thing about this Frank Castle is that it's very much, you know, it's the death sentence. He's like, yeah, no, they're all going to die. Like that's, well, I'm in this with you. Like, you know, because part of the plot in these first 6 episodes is a character called Micro, who's a hacker, figures out that the Punisher's alive and wants to get him to help him take down sort of this big conspiracy that they've both been wrapped up in. And they have that one scene where Micro finally, you know, is able to convince, you know, Frank that he's on the up and up. But Frank is like, okay, I'm in, but you know, I'm ready to kill some people. And it's like, and he's so like, he's like, I'm not doing this unless I get to kill. And it's not right. like in a Tarantino way, like, yippee-yay. Like, he's right. very serious about it. And like, we're here we go. And yeah, is really interesting stuff.
I think also to your point, you know, about Karen Bryan, and it's really nice to have these different stories and chapters. And we see, you know, new casts are introduced, but you have someone like Karen Page who could bounce in between the series. And it's a really amazing world, yeah. I think, that they've managed to build. On a sort of side note, there was sort of a debate whether or not when Disney takes to its own streaming service, if they would take all of these Marvel properties. And I thought they absolutely would because – you know, sure, the kids might want to watch the animated stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, if you're going to buy this service, wouldn't you want to have all the Marvel stuff in one spot? And because it's Disney, it was funny. It was a small debate that kind of popped up at work about, you know, whether or not, you know, those would go. But I don't think they're going to leave them on Netflix.
It depends on the deal that they made, you know.
It depends on the deal.
Did Netflix produce it? Does Netflix own it? I mean, I'm sure Disney Marvel would never...
Well, this was ABC. ABC produced Punisher.
Yeah, they co-produced it, but is Netflix just a distributor? Does Disney? I can't imagine, you know, ABC, Disney, whatever, basically producing a show that they would not have the rights to.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I cannot imagine that.
But it's. I mean, honestly, right now. But you know, Daredevil. I love Luke Cage. I love this show. I mean, I'm so glad they just did it right. And again, I feel like even with the very small knowledge I know about The Punisher, you know, I feel like they want to do the fans right. They want to build and treat the characters with respect, and they seem to do that almost every time. You know, yeah. Iron Fist aside, but
it's interesting to me because the one character that I would love for this Punisher to meet is Tony Stark. Like, mm-hmm. I would just love to see how he reacts to some dude flying around in armor who's like, "Hey, dude, I'm so like blah 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 blah." I think the reaction would be very much sort of like what Captain America. Like, oh my God, like that would be amazing. Can you imagine, like, if you could have John Bernthal's Punisher meet up
You know? I think the interesting thing is he's definitely, I think, the biggest name they've casted for this type of show. He's been in more blockbusters and major motion pictures, I think, than anyone. Unless not like someone like Sigourney Weaver, of course. But if you look at the other cast, that they're all seasoned.
Yeah, you mean as leads.
He's been in some, and he's been cameos in some major films.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would hesitate to give him a bit part, and I hope they will, even if it's a 10-minute cameo in something. If they're able to do that, it would be fantastic. I mean, honestly, I'm really looking forward to finishing the entire thing so we could really talk about the entire arc once it's done.
Right
now, I gotta say I'm loving it, man. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I have to say I had my doubts. The first two episodes, I was like, oh boy, like, what are we doing? But then once Micro showed up, I think in the first, but once they sort of solidified their relationship and mm-hmm. then their plans started to move forward, or they started moving forward on their plan, I really enjoyed it much more. And, everything sort of gelled into place. Like in the very beginning, I was like you, I did not like Dinah Madani. I did sort of like her sidekick, Sam Stein, but as the show grew, you know, moved forward, everyone sort of like really grew on me, and then things really started to gel. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that it was also my wife's opinion too that sort of softened me up on it, because I mean, it's not that she doesn't like this stuff, but for her to go like, are we going to watch The Punisher tonight? Like, yeah, I was like, oh, okay, there must be something to this that my wife, you know, really wants to watch it. You know what I mean? So I think this is another really great hit for Netflix and Marvel. You know, I can't wait to watch the next six episodes. As soon as I get off, with you. I'm just going to run to the TV and watch the second half. So hopefully you and I can get together next week and chat about the end and talk about the whole story in general, because I feel like the only way, the only direction that this can go down, it can go for me, is either up or down, you know what I mean? And, and so far it looks like, I mean, I'm very intrigued. I like it a lot. I think there's a lot of like really, really, relevant stuff in the show that I did not expect to sort of, be thinking about or chatting about. And, yeah, it's great stuff. I can't wait. And, you know, it would just be, yeah, I mean, I was never a fan of the Punisher as a comic book character, really, but I am a fan of this, so I'm excited.
Absolutely. I think that's been the trend for myself. I only read really Incredible Hulk from Marvel when I was collecting. Everything else is really DC and, you know, occasional graphic novels. And it's flipped. It's totally flipped. I've really never been more into Marvel. And honestly, anything they put out, I'm willing to go see, because it's, you know, I wasn't really even planning on seeing Thor. I went to see it for Hulk, and I was pleasantly surprised, even though there was a ton of, it's, you know, a comedy. But again, I feel like they did it right. They put together a brain trust of people that would take care of the characters, take care of the individual world building. And man, I just, you feel that and especially productions like this, it's just like these actors, man, they took it real, real serious. And it shows. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about the other half of this, and getting into more detail.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, Ian. I'm so glad we got a chance to chat The Punisher together, and I can't wait to watch the second half and just devour it and, you know, see where all this goes, because I'm hoping they do The Punisher season two, or at least he shows up in other segments of the Marvel Universe. But yeah, so I don't know, The Punisher part one. This has been Christian Horn and Ian Scheller of Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with The Punisher Part 2. As always, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. You can email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you for listening, and have a happy Thanksgiving, because by the time we get back, Turkey Day will have already passed. So everyone eat tons of turkey, try and not to overdo it, and but you know, overdo it, it's Thanksgiving, that's what everyone does. So happy Thanksgiving, and enjoy The Punisher with your friends and family on Turkey Day. Be thankful for The Punisher, I guess. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.